Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. Boy, oh boy, you are going to meet some interesting characters today. All of these folks have some kind of vision problem and are fictional characters. Some are characters in novels, some in movies, some in television, and you'll even hear about some in cartoons and comic books. But first, I'd like to read you a story by McKinley Cantor. He was an American author who wrote actually more than 30 novels. His heyday was mostly in the 40s and 50s when he won the Pulitzer Prize for his novel Andersonville. This, however, is a standalone short story, and it's titled A Man Who Had No Eyes, and then once again it's by McKinley Cantor. A beggar was coming down the avenue just as Mr. Parsons emerged from his hotel. He was a blind beggar, carrying the traditional battered cane, thumping his way before him with the cautious, half-furtive efforts of the sightless. He was a shaggy, thick-necked fellow. His coat was greasy about the lapels and pockets, and his hand splayed over the cane's crook with a futile sort of clinging. He wore a black pouch slung over his shoulder. Apparently, he had something to sell. The air was rich with spring, sun was warm and yellowed on the asphalt. Mr. Parsons, standing there in front of his hotel and noting the clack-clack approach of the sightless man, felt a sudden and foolish sort of pity for all blind creatures. And, thought Mr. Parsons, he was very glad to be alive. A few years ago he had been a little more than a skilled laborer, and now he was successful, respected, and admired in insurance. And he had done it alone, unaided, struggling beneath handicaps. And he was still young. The blue air of spring, fresh from its memories of windy pools and lush shrubbery, could thrill him with eagerness. Cigarette lighters for sale. Mr. Parsons took a step forward just as the tap, tap, tapping blind man passed him by. Quickly, the shabby little fellow turned. "Listen, Governor, just a minute of your time." Mr. Parsons said, "It's late. I have an appointment. Do you want me to give you something?" "I ain't no beggar, Governor. You'd bet I ain't got. I've got this handy little article here," and he fumbled until he could press a small object into Mr. Parsons' hand, "a small little object that I sell. $1. Best cigarette lighter made." Mr. Parsons stood there, somewhat annoyed and embarrassed. He was a handsome figure with his immaculate gray suit and gray hat and malacca stick. Of course, the man with the cigarette lighters could not see him. "But I don't smoke," he said. "Listen, I bet you know plenty of people who smoke. Nice little present," wheedled the man. "And, mister, you wouldn't mind helping a poor guy out?" And he clung to Mr. Parsons' sleeve. Mr. Parsons sighed and felt in his vest pocket. He brought out 2 half dollars and pressed them into the man's hand. "Certainly I'll help you out. As you say, I can give it to someone. Maybe the elevator boy would..." He hesitated, not wishing to be boorish and inquisitive, even with this blind peddler. "Have you lost your sight entirely?" A chemical explosion disaster. The shabby man pocketed the 2 half dollars. 14 years, Governor," then he added with an insane sort of pride. "Westbury, sir, I was one of 'em." "Westbury?" repeated Mr. Parsons. "Ah, yes, the chemical explosion. The papers haven't mentioned that for years, but at the time it was supposed to be one of the greatest disasters in..." "Yeah, and they forgot all about it." The fellow shifted his feet wearily. "I tell you, Governor, a man who was in it don't forget about it. Last thing I ever saw was a sea shop going up in one grand smudge and gas pouring in at all the busted windows." Mr. Parsons coughed, but the blind peddler was caught up with the train of his one dramatic reminiscence. And also he was thinking that there might be more half dollars in Mr. Parsons' pocket. "Just think about it, Governor. There was 108 people killed, about 200 injured, and over 50 of them lost their eyes, blind as bats." He groped forward until his dirty little hand rested against Mr. Parsons' coat. "I tell you, sir, there was nothing worse than that in the war, okay? I wouldn't have been well took care of. but I was just a working man, working for what was in it, and I got it. You're so right, I got it. While the capitalists were making their dough, they was insured. Don't worry about that, they...
Insured, repeated his listener.
Yes, that's what I sell. Blinded by the accident. You want to know how I lost my eyes? Cried the man. Well, here it is. His words fell with the bitter and studied drama of a story often told, and told for money. I was there in that sea shop, last of all the folks rushing out. Out in the air, there was a chance, even with the building exploding right and left. A lot of guys made it safely out the door and got away. And just when I was about there, crawling along between those big vats, a guy behind me grabs my leg and he says, "Let me pass, you." Maybe he was nuts, I don't know. I try to forgive him in my heart, Governor, but he was bigger than me. He hauls me back and climbs right over me, tramples me into the dirt, and he gets out. And I lie there with all that poison gas pouring down on all sides of me, and flames and stuff. He swallowed, a studied sob, and then stood dumbly expectant. He could imagine the next words. Tough luck, my man, awfully tough. Now I want to. Well, that's the story, Governor. The spring wind shrilled past them, damp and quivering now. An unexpected twist. That's the story? Not quite, said Mr. Parsons. The blind peddler shivered crazily. Not quite. What do you mean? Well, the story is true, Mr. Parsons said, except that it was the other way around. Other way around? He croaked unamiably. Say, Governor. I was in C shop, said Mr. Parsons. It was the other way around. You were the fellow who hauled back on me and climbed over me. You were bigger than I was, Marquardt. The blind man stood for a long time, swallowing hoarsely. He gulped. Parsons? I thought you... And then he screamed fiendishly. Yes, maybe so, maybe so. But I'm blind, and you've been standing here letting me spout to you and laughing at me every minute. I'm blind! People in the street turned to stare at him. You got away, but I'm blind, do you hear? I'm... Well, said Mr. Parsons, don't make such a row about it, Marquardt. So am I. So there's your short story by McKinley Cantor to open this program today. Now I've got a few brief comments about five current and quite popular pieces of fiction. All of these books have characters who are blind. Information for this part comes from the website Goodreads. The first one is The Fault in Our Stars by John Green. I fell in love the way you fall asleep, slowly, and then all at once. This is a quote from the book, The Fault in Our Stars. Despite the tumor-shrinking medical miracle that has bought her a few years, Hazel, the main character, has never been anything but terminal, her final chapter inscribed upon her diagnosis. But when a gorgeous plot twist named Augustus Waters suddenly appears at the Cancer Kids support group, Hazel's story is about to be completely rewritten. The book, insightful, bold, irreverent, and raw, The Fault in Our Stars, is award-winning author John Green's most ambitious and heartbreaking work yet, brilliantly exploring the funny, thrilling, and tragic business of being alive and in love. And I think this book is primarily for young adults and adults as well. The title is The Fault in Our Stars by John Green. It was written in 2012, and it was made into a movie in 2014. You may have seen it in that form. The next book, All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr, and that's spelled D-O-E-R-R. From the highly acclaimed, multiple award-winning author Anthony Doerr, a stunningly ambitious and beautiful novel about a blind French girl and a German boy whose paths collide in occupied France as both try to survive the devastation of World War II. Marie Laurie lives with her father in Paris, within walking distance of the Museum of Natural History, where he works as the master of the locks, and there are thousands of locks in that museum. When she is six, she goes blind, and her father builds her a model of their neighborhood, every house, every manhole, so she can memorize it with her fingers and navigate the real streets with her feet and cane. When the Germans occupy Paris,
Father and daughter flee to St. Malo on the Brittany coast, where Marie-Laurie's agoraphobic great-uncle lives in a tall, narrow house by the seawall. Now, in another world, in Germany, an orphan boy, Werner, grows up with his younger sister, Jutta, both enchanted by a crude radio that Werner finds. He becomes a master at building and fixing radios, a talent that wins him a place at an elite and brutal military academy, and ultimately makes him a highly specialized tracker of the resistance. Werner travels through the heart of Hitler Youth to the far-flung outskirts of Russia and finally into St. Malo, where his path converges with Marie-Laurie. Dorr's gorgeous combination of soaring imagination with observation is electric. Deftly interweaving the lives of Marie-Laurie and Werner, Dorr illuminates the ways against all odds that people try to be good to one another. 10 years in the writing, All the Light We Cannot See is Anthony Dorr's most ambitious and dazzling work yet. This was written in 2014, and it's considered historical fiction, mostly for adults. I read it, 500 pages. It is not a movie yet, but watch for it. Someone has bought the movie rights for it. This is All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Dorr. The next book is called Peter Nimble and His Fantastic Eyes, written by Jonathan Auxier. This is a book for older children or young adults, and it's considered to be the first of the Peter Nimble series. This is a fantasy, 400 pages long, so it just might appeal to adults, too, who like the fantasy genre. Peter Nimble and His Fantastic Eyes is the utterly beguiling tale of a 10-year-old blind orphan who has been schooled in a life of thievery. One fateful afternoon, he steals a box from a mysterious traveling haberdasher, a box that contains 3 pairs of magical eyes. When he tries the first pair, he is instantly transported to a hidden island where he is presented with a special quest to travel to the dangerous vanished kingdom and to rescue a people in need. Along with his loyal sidekick, a knight who has been turned into an unfortunate combination of horse and cat, with his loyal sidekick and the magic eyes, he embarks on an unforgettable swashbuckling adventure to discover his true destiny. This is part of the Peter Nimble series. This one is Peter Nimble and His Fantastic Eyes, written by Jonathan Auxier, A-U-X-I-E-R. The next book, the novel, is called Insight. It's I-N, capital S-I-G-H-T, and it's written by Polly Iyer. It's spelled I-Y-E-R. Polly Iyer is the author. Psychologist Abigail Gallant fought her way back from her ex-husband's brutal attack that killed their daughter and left her blind. Now she reads audiobooks, runs with a guide at a local track, and has a thriving practice in psychology that specializes in treating people who are newly disabled. The last thing she needs is another man in her life. Enter Detective Luke McAllister, a cop forced into counseling a year after a gun blast during a meth lab takeover robbed him of his hearing. Luke is fighting hard to stay on the force, but computer work and fingerprint analysis is not what he had in mind. Initially reluctant to Abby's therapy, Luke's barriers tumble because Abby sees deeper into him than anyone ever cared to. Though Luke's lip reading is excellent, he still refuses to listen to Abby's warning that his romantic overtures jeopardize her professional ethics. But when break-ins and threatening computer messages escalate into a physical attack on Abby and her guide dog, Luke walks a fine line between cop, protector, and lover. Unable to deny their physical attraction, Abby and Luke tiptoe around their personal baggage and enter into a delicate relationship. Then Abby is kidnapped. While Luke puts his life at risk to find her, Abby discovers the ghosts of her past are back to haunt her, and the man she once loved was as much of a victim as she. This one is called Insight, and it's written by Polly Iyer. I-Y-E-R is the way you spell the author's name. The next book is called Scarred Horizon. It's by Jackie Williams, and it's book number 4 in the series called Scarred. Paul's story. To be blind was bad enough. To question his sanity was a kick in the teeth. To give him a babysitter to monitor his every move was beyond his hard-pressed endurance. Kicked out of the army and queuing up at the dreaded job center, unable to even search for employment himself, had been humiliating enough. Having to stand there and wait in line while listening to the vile terrorist who had murdered his team and had taken his sight was more than Paul could take. The warlord had to die. It was a pity that the public didn't see it that way and prevented a raging Paul from dishing out his own form of justice. Convincing the assault trial judge to choose an option preferable to prison was going to be an even harder task to perform. Paul's former army mates are not going to let him be taken down without a fight, but making a soft and fragrant babysitter, a condition of his parole, was a mortifying possibility that had never once crossed his mind. Amy would do just about anything to see the big, handsome man sitting in the dock regain his pride, but she hadn't reckoned on Paul's stubborn independence. He is blind beyond reason, and she can't get through to the obstinate blockhead with the idea that she only has his best interests in mind. If her good intentions break her own fragile heart, then that is something she will just have to conquer. But a month of child-minding, his uncooperative ex-soldier, is becoming even more difficult than her generous spirit can survive. With evil about to enter the beautiful chateau in the French countryside, will Paul open his mind and expose his hidden emotions for long enough to see the beautiful light in his forever darkened world? Or will his and Amy's future perish under a viciously scarred horizon? That's the name of the book, Scarred Horizon, and it's written by Jackie Williams. The book gently addresses the issues of disability after injuries sustained in battle. It is an uplifting read full of romance and intrigue, suitable for ages 16 and above. With that kind of a warning, it does contain sensual sex and some swearing. And once again, the book is Scarred Horizon by Jackie Williams. Next, we'll go to some blind characters. These are real characters from movies, TV, cartoons, video games, and even comic books. This information came from BrailleWorks.com. Characters who are blind in entertainment are rare, but when they are included, the characters are often interesting and provide a perspective on life not normally noticed by those with sight. Blind characters are usually popular with audiences, especially when their other senses have heightened abilities. A great example of this is Denzel Washington's portrayal of Eli in The Book of Eli, a 2010 American post-apocalyptic action film. So why are people so intrigued? Blind characters often evoke feelings and responses from the audience that aren't always felt for the other characters. The characters below are split into categories by entertainment genre and cover several eye conditions, including partial vision, visual impairment, total and temporary blindness. First, we'll deal with some films and movies. We'll start with the character Eli, as we mentioned above, played by Denzel Washington in the movie called The Book of Eli. In a post-apocalyptic America, where the once picturesque countryside has become a desolate and violent wasteland, Eli fights to protect the sacred tome that could hold the key to the survival of the human race in this futuristic thriller. Audiences don't find out that Eli is blind until the end of the movie, when the antagonist steals Eli's Bible, the last known copy in existence, and realizes that it is a Braille book. Another movie, the character Frank Slade, played by Al Pacino, the title of the movie is, you might remember, Scent of a Woman. This is a 1992 American drama film that tells the story of a preparatory school student who takes a job as an assistant to a surly, blind, retired Army officer. Pacino won the Academy Award for Best Actor for his performance, and the film was nominated for Best Director, Best Picture, and Best Adapted Screenplay. The next, Virgil Adamson is the character. It's played by Val Kilmer, and the title is At First Sight. The movie At First Sight tells the story of a man who has grown accustomed to his blindness. At the urging of his girlfriend, Virgil, the title character, undergoes an operation that restores his sight and subsequently deals with all the changes to his life. Once again, the movie was called At First Sight. Next, the character is just referred to as the blind man, and he's played by Stephen Lang in the movie called Don't Breathe. Don't Breathe is a 2016 American thriller film which tells the story of three Detroit thieves who like breaking into houses of wealthy people. After hearing about a blind veteran played by Stephen Lang, this is the blind man, who received a large cash settlement following the death of his only child, the trio decides to invade the man's secluded home in an abandoned neighborhood, figuring he's an easy target. Finding themselves trapped inside, the young intruders must fight for their lives after making a shocking discovery about their supposedly helpless victim. Next, we come to Susie Hendricks, a character played by Audrey Hepburn, and the movie was Wait Until Dark. This is a suspense thriller released way back in 1967. It stars Audrey Hepburn as a young blind woman. Hepburn was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Actress for her portrayal of Susie Hendricks, but she didn't actually take the award home that year. So next we come to somebody called Blinken, who was played by Mark Blankfield in Robin Hood, Men in Tights. This is a spoof of Robin Hood in general. This movie, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, director Mel Brooks adds his own personal touch, parodying traditional adventure films, romance films, and the whole idea of men running around the woods wearing tights. Robin's family has a servant named Blinken, who happens to be blind. Robin brings Blinken along on his quest to get revenge on Prince John and the Sheriff of Rottingham for their roles in his family's death. Now, because it's a comedy, there are a lot of stereotypical blind jokes, but they are presented in a lighthearted manner, making Blinken one of the more humorous and memorable characters. So next we'll go to some television characters who are blind or have some kind of visual problem. The first one was way back. Mary Ingalls, played by Melissa Sue Anderson from Little House on the Prairie. As if growing up in the 1800s wasn't hard enough, the eldest daughter on Little House on the Prairie went blind as a teenager due to scarlet fever. However, in the minds of many people, Mary's triumph over adversity makes her one of the most memorable TV characters in history. This show ran for a long time. I don't have the dates, but you probably remember what those might be. Long time ago. Next on television, there's a character named Allison, played by Courtney Thorne Smith. This is from Melrose Place. Allison, in that show, went blind on Melrose Place after Kimberly blew up the building at the beginning of season 4. Her temporary blindness lasted from episode 1 in season 4, which was called Postmortem Madness, to episode 3 from season 4, which was called Blind Ambition. Next, we've got Spock himself, played by Leonard Nimoy, and you know the show Star Trek. In the last episode of the first season of the original sci-fi television series Star Trek called Operation Annihilate, Spock is temporarily blinded while the crew of the USS Enterprise finds a way to exterminate malevolent parasitic creatures that have taken over the residents of a Federation colony. Oh, this is one you're going to remember for sure. Hawkeye Pierce, played by Alan Alda from the program MASH. The episode titled Out of Sight, Out of Mind, this was the 99th episode of the MASH television series, the third episode of the fifth season. It was originally aired on October 5th, 1976. During this episode, Hawkeye contends with sudden blindness after a heater explodes in his face. Hawkeye Pierce. Boy, those are good shows. Next, we have the character called Blake Carrington, who's played by John Forsythe on the Dynasty series. Dynasty is an American primetime television soap opera that aired on ABC from January 12, 1981, all the way through May 11, 1989. The second season of that show, Dynasty, featured an episode called Blake's Blindness, wherein Blake finds out what it's like to be blind when the bad guys blow up a car right next to him. He was angry and didn't take it very well at first, but eventually decided he would use the temporary blindness to his advantage. Once his sight returned, Blake didn't tell anyone and pretended to still be blind in an effort to find out if his wife was being unfaithful to him. Next on television, Arthur Herbert Fonzarelli, also known as Fonzie or the Fonz, played by Henry Winkler on the show Happy Days. Aye, where do they come up with this corny storyline? Al accidentally hits Fonzie in the head with a serving tray, and he's blinded as a result. Richie tries tough love to snap the leather-jacketed legend out of his self-pity, but unexpectedly adds a new four-letter word to the Fonz's vocabulary, and that word was fear. Okay, in cartoons, yes, even in cartoons, there are people with vision problems. Marge Simpson from The Simpsons. During the 13th episode of season 20 called Gone Maggie Gone, Marge is temporarily blinded after viewing an eclipse without an official eclipse shoebox viewer. And then way, way, way back, Quincy Magoo. Remember Mr. Magoo? He was created at the United Productions of America, UPA, Animation Studios in 1949. He was voiced by Jim Backus. He was a wealthy, short-statured retiree who gets into all kinds of comical situations as a result of his extreme nearsightedness, compounded by his stubborn refusal to admit the problem. Through uncanny streaks of luck, however, the situation always seems to work itself out for him. Next, we've got somebody from the comics, actually comic books. Her name is Madame Webb, also known as Cassandra Webb, from Marvel Comics, a fictional supporting character in the Spider-Man comic book series. Madame Webb first appeared in The Amazing Spider-Man number 210 in 1980. She is, get this, a paralyzed, blind, telepathic, clairvoyant, and precognitive mutant, allowing her to work as a professional medium. She was originally stricken with myasthenia gravis and was connected to a life support system, which included a series of tubes shaped like a spider web. Well, very interesting. The program ends this week with a quote. The quote says, "Maybe you have to know the darkness before you can see." This was written by Madeline Longo, a popular American author, perhaps most famous for her young adult novel called A Wrinkle in Time. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.